Good evening. New York City schools are closed again with more closures in store. Are the state and city on the same page as the pandemic gets worse? Is President-elect Biden selecting a war cabinet? And will the United States admit defeat in Afghanistan? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. In-person learning at the New York City's public schools will temporarily close starting tomorrow, Thursday, November 19th, and students will be shifted to full remote learning. The decision made public this afternoon comes after the city's seven-day COVID positivity rate reached 3%. It's the threshold Mayor Bill de Blasio has long said would trigger a system-wide closure.
Unfortunately, as of today, on our seven-day rolling average for coronavirus positivity, New York City has hit exactly 3.0%. And as a result, we do need to close our schools for the coming days. No one is happy about this decision. We all, in fact, are feeling very sad about this decision because so much good work has been put into keeping the schools opened and opening them up to begin with. Let's start there. Opening the schools when almost no other major school system in America opened, making them so safe. But we set a very clear standard, and we need to stick to that standard.
And schools chancellor Richard Carranza said parents should have confidence the situation was under control.
This is not a happy day for us in the Department of Education. It's been an eventful and very challenging year in so many ways, and to say the least. But our schools have opened and been remarkably safe with a 0.19 positivity rate. They've also been safe havens for our children. And we know our students need that interaction. So we feel a deep sense of commitment to making sure we can open for in-person learning again as soon as it is physically safe to do so.
UFT President Michael Mulgrew had this to say.
We gave people a warning to think about it for the remainder of this month. So certainly through Thanksgiving, school will be closed.
Schools Chancellor Carranza. United Federation of Teachers President Michael Mulgrew had this to say.
Since last March, our union, the teachers, guidance counselors, paraprofessionals, therapists, secretaries, have all worked really hard. We worked hard to instruct our students during our shutdown period, but we also worked really hard to make sure that we could open our school system and open it safely for our students, their families, and ourselves. And we are very proud of the fact that we're the only large school system in this country that is open. The 3% positivity rate that was in the plan submitted by the city to the state in terms of shutting the schools or putting them into remote was put forth by the city's doctors and confirmed by the doctors that we were working with that is the appropriate number. Now, learning is going to continue while we're in remote. But let me be clear, we want our schools open again. That is why I am pleading with all New Yorkers to help us get our schools open again. We need everyone to follow the rules, everyone to wear a mask, everyone to take this virus seriously once again and do what we did before, which is put this virus at bay. And so this way, we can open our schools again and once again have the joy of seeing our children face to face.
The mayor added the closure would likely last past Thanksgiving.
We gave people a warning to think about it for the remainder of this month. So certainly through Thanksgiving, school will be closed. We're going to see with the state how quickly we can finalize those standards and then what we'll have to do to meet those standards. That week after Thanksgiving is the earliest, but I'm not yet able to say if it will be then or a point thereafter. But we have real work to do, which I think we can do quickly.
At his news conference held just prior to de Blasio, Governor Andrew Cuomo seemed unaware the city had decided to close the schools.
Oh, I'm sorry, say that again.
The chancellor has announced to principals that schools will be closing temporarily in New York City.
So the mayor's saying it hit 3%?
The chancellor has said that in emails to principals that the schools will be closed temporarily, yes. So I just wanted a reaction from you, the states.
But that is what the mayor has always said. And remember, it's not the mayor said, when I say the mayor said, it's not technically accurate. We went through a very formal process where I said consult with the parents, make them part of it, have web chats, have webinars, because you can't just by fiat say the school's open or the school's closed. It only works if the parents are willing to send the children. So make it an inclusive collective process. I mandated that the school district consult with the parents and have webinars, et cetera, and answer all the questions.
But de Blasio says the governor shouldn't have been surprised because they had just spoken.
No, I spoke to him before. I didn't see his presser, but we had, you know, a number of conversations in the course of the day. We've been talking over the last several days about this possibility, obviously. And the specific exact moment that the press release was going out, he might not have known about because we had to get information out to schools before they left, but he understood it was coming for sure.
Cuomo's admission came moments after an angry exchange with a reporter, exacerbated by a day of indecision and possible confusion from government officials.
So what's going on? Does the city still have the ability to close its schools? Are you now taking control and saying that you have the power to make this decision? And for the millions of parents who want to know, are the schools going to open tomorrow in New York City?
All right. First of all, let's try not to be obnoxious and offensive in your tone, because you're 100% wrong. These laws have all been in effect for months. I've always said we set initial parameters, and then the school district picked a percent within those parameters. New York City picked 3%. We announced the Orange Zone law over a month ago. I don't know if you were here or if you were paying attention, but that has been in effect for over a month. It always said if by the state's numbers you hit 3%, the schools close. What's going on here is nothing that the law hasn't said for over a month. We then had the test out procedures. If you were paying attention, you would have known we closed the schools in New York City 2 weeks ago. Remember when we did an orange zone and a red zone in Brooklyn and Queens, and we closed the schools? Don't you remember that?
It was 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so what are you talking about? What are you talking about? You're now going to override. We did it already. That's the law, an orange zone and a red zone. Follow the facts.
I'm still confused.
Well, then you're confused.
I'm confused. And
then I'll tell you what, Jimmy.
Parents are still confused as well. The schools
in New York City confused.
Tomorrow.
You're confused.
No, I think parents are
law,
very confused as well.
Read the law, and you won't be confused.
But Governor, to follow Jimmy's question, are the schools going to be open tomorrow?
The schools are open by state law.
But will they be open tomorrow? That's the question. I think Jimmy's correct in asking that question. I don't think it's obnoxious at all.
Well, I don't really care what you think. Of course, you agree with him because you're in the same business with him. The schools, by state law, well, what is the answer to your question? What is the answer to your question?
I don't know what the answer is.
Yes, you do.
You said
when does the state close the schools?
When you get to an orange zone, which you're suggesting could happen, but is not necessarily happening by tomorrow.
So then what are you asking? You just answered your own question.
The other week you said...
Excuse me.
But on one hand, you have granted Bill de Blasio the kind of oversight of his schools, and there are rumors that the number in New York City will rise above 3%, which would trigger closing of schools. Now, you've just said that an orange zone could be in the offing for the entirety of New York City, which would also close schools, but your number is 2.5. So I guess just the point-blank question is, are schools going to be open tomorrow in New York
Let's
City?
Let's do it again for you, because maybe gets confusing over the days and nights. Schools set their own, 700 school districts, they all set their own number. That's the number. Unless they fall into a microcluster. The microcluster overrides the local rules. Yellow, orange, red. If it's Buffalo, I don't even know the Buffalo closing number for schools. But the Buffalo schools close in that orange zone, right? Why? Because it's an orange zone and it's over 3%. Well, maybe Buffalo had a rule of 4% or 5% or 6%. I don't know. Doesn't matter. If it goes over 3% in an orange zone, because now it's saying the decision isn't just about a school. It's about a school in an intensely infected community.
The governor also restated his determination to ban Thanksgiving dinner gatherings above 10 people, an unpopular decision that has at least one county sheriff refusing to enforce Cuomo's order.
It's arrogant, and it violates your constitutional duty. I didn't say I swear to uphold the laws that I agree with. I didn't say that. If I don't agree with the law, then I'm not going to enforce that law. No, it doesn't matter what my opinion is. I'm a law enforcement officer. I enforce the laws. I don't get to pick and choose. Well, I'm not going to enforce domestic violence law because I think that's a family affair. They had a family fight, and I don't think it's the state's right to come in and say, you shouldn't treat your wife that way, you shouldn't treat your husband that way. No, there's a law, and you have to enforce the law. Or don't call yourself a law enforcement officer. Say, I enforce the laws that I think are good laws. That's what you get. But then I'm not a law enforcement official, and I'm not operating a law enforcement agency. And that has consequences, too.
The governor then relented, saying how to enforce his executive order was up to each jurisdiction and there would be no invasion of privacy.
You know where it's spreading now? That's why on my personal theory here, people change their behavior. It's less in bars and restaurants. It's still there. But they've migrated to home gatherings. That's why we call it living room spread, family spread. That's why I think Thanksgiving is going to be terrible. Because they said, we can't hang out in the bar. We can't go to a restaurant. Let's go to your house. We'll watch the Bills game. We'll have a few beers. We'll hang around. And by the way, if I'm going, do you mind if I bring Jesse and Nick? No. Tell them to come. Tell them to bring a six-pack. Okay. Now we're sitting there with 25 people. All innocuous, nobody malicious. That's where it's coming from. And this is really hard to stop because you're right. It's very hard to restrict. It's very hard to regulate. And it's very hard to police. So, yeah. Is it hard to police? Yes. But if you see it, stop it. That's really the point of the law. If you see it, stop it. Don't invade privacy.
Governor Cuomo, you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. WBAI was interviewing City Comptroller Scott Stringer as the news of the school closings broke. Despite acknowledging the looming possibility, Stringer was still surprised.
I haven't seen the data, but we may very well be over the 3% threshold. I'm going to need some more information that we're currently gathering.
Your general reaction to how the schools are being managed by the mayor and the school's chancellor?
I issued a plan back in July about the best way to open up our schools. I think it's been really hard for the chancellor and the mayor informing parents. Again, they struggle with transparency and decisiveness. Let's see how it goes going forward. You know, I have two kids, an 8-year-old and a 7-year-old. They're public school kids. They're on remote learning. There's a lot of issues with remote and internet access and device access for so many kids who struggle economically in the city. There's a lot of work we have to do in this area.
And the comptroller went on to discuss legal papers his office filed against the city today. The action is to make the city comply with a subpoena he issued last June, looking into the city's preparedness in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Stringer says the city has been stalling ever since.
Well, we had no choice but to go to court in order to compel the city to give us critical documents and emails as we continue to investigate the city's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. New Yorkers need to know when we knew the virus was here and what the city did in response. And there's a lot of open questions. And part of the reason why we do this work is to make sure we can do an analysis of what the city did right as relates to fighting the pandemic, but also what the city did wrong. What were the gaps that were missing? We all know that our nurses and so many frontline workers did not have the proper protective equipment. We have to look at that supply chain. We know that there were some hospitals that had a lot of resources and others that did not. We need to know what the strategy City Hall put forth when we were losing thousands of lives in the city. For the mayor to stonewall this investigation is not only the height of arrogance, it is actually very dangerous because you need to know what the history of the pandemic fight was all about. We need to be transparent about it. And I asked for information in May. They did not provide us with any of the documents we needed. We then subpoenaed those documents in June, haven't heard a word in 5 months. He wants to stonewall this until he leaves office. We can't let him do that. That's why we went to the state Supreme Court, so the judge can compel him to give us the documents.
You use the term, a pretty strong term, obstructing. Why would the city obstruct? And I guess I want to put that in context of what is the city supposed to do as far as preparedness for disasters like this? This is an unusual one. I mean, you could subpoena the White House because they weren't prepared either.
My jurisdiction isn't the White House. My jurisdiction under the charter is the city of New York. And hopefully we're going to have a different White House that will usher in a vaccination and get this under control. But it still means that we have to look at the protocols the city has designed both before, during, and after this virus. And we need to have those questions answered. It's part of our due diligence. I would not be doing my job as controller if we didn't ask questions. There are financial implications to our investigation as it relates to money spent and how best to use our limited resources. And all of this means that we want to develop a system, an emergency management system that will continue to fight the pandemic, but also to understand that perhaps down the line, we may face a similar situation and we clearly need to be better prepared. The best way we can look at this is to see what we've done and what we're going to do going forward.
Vaccination, how would this affect the readiness of the city if there's problems, it was problematic, their response, and you're having a hard time getting information? What does that portend for what's happening when we have to vaccinate 8 million people?
Well, it's a very good point. The only thing I could really speak to is the investigation and the documents we need, the emails we need, so that when we talk to witnesses, when we talk to people in government, we have full knowledge so we can make responsible representation. And when we do our report, we will be informed by fact and discussion and transparency. New Yorkers deserve nothing less.
City Comptroller Scott Stringer. And in national news, House Democrats nominated Nancy Pelosi on Wednesday to be the speaker who guides them again next year as Joe Biden becomes president. And she quickly seemed to suggest those would be her final 2 years in the leadership post. The California Democrat, the first woman to be speaker, was nominated by acclamation as the party's lawmakers use a pandemic-induced virtual meeting to pick their leaders. Pelosi already has served 6 years on the job, but the next two loom as her toughest. After unexpectedly losing at least 10 incumbents in this month's elections, Democrats will have about a 222 to 213 majority, the tightest margin in two decades. That prospect has demoralized many Democrats and ignited blame trading between moderates and progressives over why they flopped on Election Day. But American University anthropologist Adrienne Pine, author of the book Asylum for Sale, Profit and Protest in the Migration Industry, just wrote an article saying that the Biden team appointees to his transition team, including Obama's former top immigration advisor Cecilia Munoz, are really more of the same as represented by the Trump administration. Asked about Munoz, once asked by NPR's Maria Hinojosa about family separation, that's putting children in cages, said some of these things are going to happen.
What Joe Biden's picks show is that, unfortunately, his policy is going to be more of a continuation than a break from Trump's policy, which, in fact, itself was a continuation from the Obama-Biden administration's policy of jailing people, of family separation. And, of course, Obama was known as the deporter in chief by immigration activists. So it's looking like more of the same.
That means children in cages?
Family separation, yes. Sorry, that's the euphemism that's so often used that really has resulted in children in cages. And that was started under Obama Biden, as was the sort of massive buildup of this relatively new detention complex of the private detention facilities that are now jailing so many of the people who come here seeking asylum as refugees from countries, in particular from the Northern Triangle of Central America, where the United States has created such violent conditions that people are fleeing.
When it comes to immigration, are we really getting anything different? Maybe Trump got more negative response to the same tactics because of his sort of unabashedness.
That's the real difference, is that Trump was so incredibly racist and so fascistic in his celebration of the torture of children and of the trauma of children and their families that it was impossible to look the other way. But those policies were ongoing during the Obama-Biden administration, and based on the people who Biden has appointed to his transition team, you know, which include people from right-wing think tanks like RAND and from corporate law firms, people whose positions include, for example, calling for more prisons to be built that can house entire families so as not to separate families. This sounds like Biden calling for police to shoot black people in the legs instead of shooting them in the chest. Is that really the answer we want? Is that there's something more humane than jailing children with or without their families?
What about the wall?
This is an interesting thing, because much of the wall that we've heard so much about over the past 4 years was already in place and, again, built by Obama Biden. The focus that Biden is going to have is going to be not on the kind of wall that Trump is planning to build, in particular in areas where it's causing so much ecological devastation, but instead really investing in private defense contractors who are selling surveillance technologies that are just as dangerous in many ways as a physical wall will be in terms of their implications for civil liberties.
And that's Adrienne Pine. She's an American University anthropologist. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.